everyone, and welcome to the Why Run podcast. Each episode, I talk to a different guest about how running has helped them through some of life's more challenging times. So whatever's going on in your life at the moment, good or bad, I hope that you'll be inspired to put on your trainers and hit the road running. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the latest episode of Why Run. Hope you're all doing okay. My update is that I've decided to join a running group. Since I started running 3 or so years ago, I've nearly always run on my own, but I also work on my own. And so I've decided to take the advice of so many of my guests and sign up to a club for a bit of chat, encouragement and shared running. And I've also made a New Year's resolution to start doing more park runs. And I've even ordered a wristband with my number on it to prove my commitment. So I'll let you know how I get on. Anyway, enough of me, and now to my latest guest. On this episode of Why Run, I talk to Jen, who started running regularly a few years ago after completing the Couch to 5K with a running group. But it was at the end of 2021, though, that life took a dramatic turn for Jen and her family. After months of tests, Jen's 5-year-old son, Ishan, was diagnosed with a chromosome disorder, neurofibromatosis, or NF1. The reason that Jen and her husband had taken Ishan for tests was because he was losing his sight, and it turned out that their little boy had a tumour on his optic nerve. Having NF1 means that Ishan will be susceptible to internal tumours throughout his life. Facing such a diagnosis has been heartbreaking. Jen says it has been her running through this period that has given her the strength, and she says that without it, she would be in a very dark place today. Whilst Ishan is having chemo, Jen is committed to run 100k a month. She also ran the Great North Run last year, raising £5,000 for her son's oncology ward. Jen started off by telling me how she first got into running.
You know what? I know a lot of people that go running, because I'm in a running group, not like a competitive running group. It's mainly lots of mums and lots of people that are running in their spare time having a chat. But we all seem to have one thing in common, is that none of us were particularly sporty at school. So I've never had it in me to be, so I've never really been interested in sport. In fact, I used to look at people running and think, like, what the hell are they doing? Like, how are they smiling? It just used to be something I thought I couldn't do. And the very first time I went to try to do a run was with one of my friends, and she said, oh, do you want to do a park run with me? And I was like, yeah, I'll do a park run. But with no training, no preparation, I'd set out to do this 5K with her. And of course, I couldn't do it because I hadn't built up to it. So I just felt like I failed miserably at that. But looking back, I had an 8-month-old baby. I'd never gone running. So of course, I wasn't going to suddenly do this 5K. And I remember like, having to like walk with me, and I just felt, oh my God, this is like awful. So I didn't try again running for a long time after that. And then I moved from Bristol to Derby, and one of the first things I did was join a running group, so the Couch to 5K, and that was about 4 years ago. So I just plodded along, but didn't really do much, was always at the back, always just plodding along, just having a chat.
And what was your motivation for going to the running club when you first moved? Was it to like meet people? Was it more of a social thing, or what was the reason?
Yeah, I think so. A social thing. And I just thought, I just had that kind of niggling feeling about that park run with my friend. I thought, I'm going to try. I saw something advertised about Couch to 5K, and I thought, oh, I'm going to do it. It was like something I thought, I just need to do that. I can do that. So I did it properly. So I did the Couch to 5K with a group, with the running group, and went every week. And then we all got to 5K together.
Yeah, so then it's a shared sense of achievement, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a really, really lovely running group. They're really supportive. So then when I had a little bit of time out, when I was pregnant and had my daughter, I did another Couch to 5K, but it was a lockdown Couch to 5K. So we were all kind of saying how we were doing digitally and having a little group. Week 5, I think, is the hideous one on Couch to 5K. I had to do that about, I don't know how many weeks. Just did that for
I can relate to that. I can remember getting stuck at week 5 and having to repeat it several times.
Yeah. Oh, did you? It's a real jump that week. But we just kept going, and then comparing how we were getting on online. And then yeah, just carried on running really from lockdown, but not really doing anything much over 5K. And then my son got poorly, and then I feel like that was my next attempt at running. But what all three things have in common is I think whenever I felt like things are not in my control, like moving to a new area or having a baby in lockdown, and then again when my son was ill, I didn't really use it as a conscious decision, but I look back at it now and I realise I've gone to running on all those occasions in some way or another.
And when you go for a run, how does that make you feel? What is it that helps you?
There's something about, I think, being a mum with two young children. It's leaving the house and nobody wanting anything from me. And I honestly don't feel like there's any other time quite like that.
So it's your me time, really.
Yeah. And the kids get used to it. They know when mama's going on a run. They know my trainers and my leggings. And they kind of, I just feel like it's kind of your respected time as well. It's kind of untouchable time. No one can come along with you or anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm doing something else, like kids want to come, and then, you know, it turns into a different type of outing.
But very much so when you've got small children.
Yeah, I know.
My children are much older now, but I can remember that feeling of just wanting to go at your own pace. But when you've got little ones, you always have to be slowing down, don't
yeah,
you?
I know. I did actually have a little run, I'd barely call it a run, at the weekend, and they were on their bikes.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah.
So how old are your children now?
So Ishan has just turned 6 and Ayla is 2, nearly 3.
And you're working as well? You said you've got like work meetings and things.
So I work 3 days a week. I've recently gone back to work. I had about 7 months off when Ishan was very poorly, so he's in hospital a lot. But yeah, I've recently gone back, so I work in a college.
Oh my God, Jen, you've got a hell of a lot on your plate that you're juggling.
Yeah, it does feel like that.
So tell me about what's happened with Ishan's health in recent times.
Well, it's a difficult time at the moment because it's coming up to a year. So it was about a year ago, things weren't going right for Ishan. And it first started with his teacher noticing some difficulties with his eyesight. So that was the first indication we had. So we took him to the opticians, and it was a really frustrating time, I would say, of about 2 months, where he was going to the opticians. They even gave him glasses. He got referred to an eye hospital. There was lots of appointments there. We're waiting for referrals, but nothing was ever kind of established with these eye appointments, and even quite specialised appointments at the hospital. So it was Christmas Day, he was really struggling. His eyesight suddenly got even worse, even in a matter of a week. So when I picked him up from school on last day of term, he couldn't see me waiting for him. And then on Christmas Day, I remember asking him what some of his presents were, and he couldn't see them.
Oh my goodness.
So it was very, very sudden, but it was very confusing because I was still taking the advice of professionals, and they were saying, okay, well, we'll have a come and bring him in again, and we'll do some more tests. And I remember them saying they were going to bring him in after New Year's, but this was Christmas, and I was like, I can't leave it. So I just took him to A&E, and I said, I'm not leaving until somebody helps me, because something is very, very wrong. So he was then given an emergency MRI at Derby Hospital, and through that MRI they found that he's has a tumour on his optic nerve in his brain. And then after they found, they did that, they did some other tests and they did some checks on his body, and they told me he had a condition called neurofibromatosis type 1. Never heard of this before, but it's a condition that he was born with, and it's genetic. And part of that condition can cause internal tumours on your body. And only very small percentage, so 10% of those with neurofibromatosis, which is called NF1 for short, will develop a tumour on their optic pathway. So his optic pathway, that is what sends the messages from his brain to his eyes. So when he was going for his eye checks, there's nothing physically wrong with his eyes, but it was the pathway in between the brain and the eyes, yeah.
As a parent, I can only imagine what it must have felt like at that time. I mean, there must have been so much fear and the unknown.
It was really, really scary. And, you know, there's lots of different emotions going through it. But one thing I think of now is that I should never have heard of NF1 through an emergency MRI. That's something that's very clear that Ishan has. Now I know what it is. So one of the big signals for that. And, you know, I do want to raise awareness because it is, even though it's rare, it's one of the most common genetic disorders. Right. So Ishan has on his back what look like birthmarks, but they're flatter than birthmarks. So they're like round little patches on his back, which when he was born, we asked about, and they said they're birthmarks, but they're not birthmarks. So if that had been checked, we would have known about his NF1. And then he, you know, any changes in eyesight would have alerted for an MRI scan sooner than it had.
Yeah.
So there's all these feelings about it. And, you know, sometimes I feel guilty as a mum because I didn't know what they, but I just assumed they were his birthmarks, but I don't know.
But how could
you?
I mean, there's no reason on earth why you would. And like you say, when he was born, you raised awareness and you were told that it was fine.
Yeah.
So what happened next?
He got transferred to Nottingham Hospital, where that's like a specialist centre. So they have nurses and doctors there that know about NF. And it's also a main site for an oncology. So he went on an oncology ward with other children that have brain tumours or were going through chemotherapy. And he stayed there for a week and he had to have surgery. So we had to have a port fitted under his skin. He'd just turned 5 at this point. We didn't, and also there was still restrictions. So it was just one parent at a time. So we were just constantly, one of us going into the hospital.
Were you able to stay with him?
Yeah, so one parent could stay with him at a time. Do you know what? I think he was there even more than a week. It's such like a weird time because he was in Derby and then he was in Nottingham and then he had to come home for a bit. But it was a period of time and we were waiting for his consultant to tell us what we already suspected because they'd seen it on the scan that he has a brain tumour. He has NF1 and he had a port fitted under his skin because we were told that he needs 18 months.
So what is a port?
So the port is what the chemotherapy is given to him in.
Okay.
So it just allows him to do normal things. So it's attached under his skin. So they said he needed 18 months of chemotherapy and it had to start straight away. At this point, his eyesight had got so bad, he couldn't see anything in front of him. And then soon afterwards, he was registered as blind, so he couldn't see anything. He'd lost all his sight in a matter of weeks.
Oh, Jen, that's your little boy.
Yeah. There's been...
How far...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. It's just remembering it all. It was a lot to take in. At that point, I thought medicine would make his eyesight better. And when I was told it wasn't going to, that was just truly devastating for me to think just had this atypical, you know, I don't want to say normal, but it felt like a normal family doing normal things. Suddenly I just thought, I've got my son is going to need adaptations and on this, that and the other. So, yeah.
Horrendous time. And how far is Nottingham between Nottingham and Derby? Because, I mean, just managing that with a family and, you know, having to do those commutes and when you've got a baby, you've got a little girl as well to look after. I mean, it's a lot to be managing.
Yeah, luckily, we aren't actually too far. So where we live in between Nottingham and Derby. But do you know what? There's so many families that I've met that are actually travelling hours to Nottingham Hospital. They could be like travelling like 3 hours because it is one of the most specialist centres. And, you know, there's a few others around the country. But so it hasn't actually been too horrendous for us with the travelling. I mean, the juggling, yeah, that is something else because it would be like one of us would be with Ishan, but then the other one would have to arrive at hospital, but we both weren't allowed in the ward. So we couldn't even greet together, if you like. So we were just in the corridor passing by, quick handover, because Ishan was scared by himself. Mm. He didn't know what was going on. So we always needed one of us with him. So we didn't really have time together during that time because then the other one had to go back for Ayla. So a lot of juggling, and it still is a juggle. I look back pre-diagnosis to this, and I used to think I had a juggle then. I used to think, school and work, but I would love to have those stresses again, those normal stresses. But he's been, I have to say, exceptionally brave. There's nobody quite like Ishan. He is just, he makes friends with every single person he meets. He doesn't stop talking.
So he's back at school now.
Yeah.
Is he in year one?
Yeah. So this started in his first term of reception when he first started school, which I think was another reason why everything got caught up. So he became a little bit anxious when he started school. It was very unusual for him because he's not an anxious little boy. He's very, very confident. But I think looking back, there was all this going on. And children don't tell you things. So when he started losing his eyesight, he didn't tell me that he couldn't see things.
No.
But when I rang the hospital to take him to A&E, they were asking him, what can you see? And he was saying he could see lights in his eyes and this and the other, but he'd never told me that and I'd never asked him that.
It's just the way children interpret the world. It's so different.
Yeah.
They just get on with it, really. Yeah. My youngest daughter has got really bad eyesight and I didn't pick up on it just because the only sign was that she used to go and stand right in front of the telly, like 6 inches from the screen when she was little. And because she managed with the rest of life, I didn't see it. And it was actually her childminder who said, have you got Ruby's eyes tested?
Ooh.
And she's wears a very strong prescription glasses ever since. And I remember being told at the time that at that age, the brain is so malleable that their little minds can override things.
And in a home environment, it's so hard to pick up as well because he's like running up and down the stairs, never bumping into anything.
Amazing.
At home.
Yeah.
But if I would take him somewhere else, then he wouldn't be able to cope.
Yeah.
I mean, things are different now. He has regained some eyesight. So he can't see at all out of his left eye. That's the optic nerve is damaged and that will never be repaired. But in his right eye, they thought the optic nerve was damaged, but it was actually very swollen. And once that swelling went down, so they gave him some steroids. And once the treatment started, he did regain some eyesight, which is nothing short of a miracle, to be honest, because I think his consultants were hugely surprised by that because we were told he would be, and blind is a spectrum and I've learned a lot about it. But when you're registered, you're either registered as partially sighted or severely sighted, and the severe end is the same as blind. So, it's complicated.
Yeah.
The extremity of what you were going through is just overwhelming.
Yeah.
So I assume at this time you weren't running?
So it's hard to remember, but I remember the first run I did, and that's why I knew I had to keep running. It was when he was in hospital, so it was very early on, and my friend was looking after my daughter, and my daughter's really clingy, and she'd only just turned two, and I was thinking, she is not going to let anybody look after her, but she did, and she really, really bonded well with my friend Becky, and she was looking after her, and I'd just come back from the hospital, and I remember looking at them thinking, oh, would you mind if I went for a quick run? And they were like, yeah, you should. So I just went for a run, and in the midst of all of this, I just needed to go. And I think I did 5 or 6K, but oh my God, I just felt like it was a massive pause button. Mm. And I just knew that that's what I needed to do.
Mm.
And I can't remember what kind of running I did then, but I remember any opportunity that I could, I would just run. Even though I was exhausted, I'd had no sleep, I was full of worry, I still needed to be outside.
I think also when you're going through extreme medical treatments in hospitals, they're the most claustrophobic environments with all that sort of recycled air and lack of windows. I can imagine just getting out and having some fresh air and a chance to breathe must have helped in some way.
It's weird because you don't really know how you're going to react in times like that. I didn't know what was happening with Ishan, whether things were bad, but I didn't even know if it was even going to get any worse. But I would think to myself that I would have just completely broken down. However, I didn't. And I think as a mum, you can surprise yourself with having some strength that you find from somewhere to keep going and to keep looking after your family, really. And I do think running has given me that strength. I think if I hadn't have done it, I would have been in a really dark place without it.
So tell me a bit more about how things are now, because this is how I found you on Instagram, is about the running that you're doing now, in terms of that you're going to keep running while Ishan's having his chemo. So yeah, tell me about how that came about.
Well, I was running and then things got a bit easier managing to run. So I had Ishan at home with me, and then he went back to school at some point. Like, I was going to school with him, and then he had a TA and he would go to school for a couple of hours when he felt well enough. And it was during those times I thought, right, I'm going to go running. Any opportunity, I was out the door running. And I realised I was running quite a lot. So I signed up for the Great North Run. Never ran, like I said, I'd only ever ran like a 5K before. Nothing significant. So that was a big challenge for me. And I know, you know, other people have done like a marathon and things like that, but the Great North Run was very significant for me to get through to this point.
Well, that's amazing. How far is it?
It's half a marathon, so that's 13 miles, about 20 something K. I don't know. I can't remember now. But yeah, it's half a marathon.
And it's hilly.
Yeah. So I was trying to run up a few hills. There's this massive hill right by Ishan's school. It's called Hopwell Hill. And I was like, right, I'm taking on Hopwell Hill today. I'd get used to running up hills. So I'd just drop him off for his 2 hours at school and not go home for that point. I'd just be like, run, go for a walk, run again. And yeah, so I was building up quite a bit of mileage. So then I thought to myself, I'm going to mean to do 100K every month while he's on treatment for 18 months, because I work well with having a challenge. If I set myself to do something, it helps me. So it's a reason to do it. It's a reason to keep getting out running. And I know running is something important. I feel like it's something, if I don't run, I'm not going to get through this time in the same way. So yeah, so I'm just going to do 100K each month. And I set up my Instagram account because I wanted to document it and take pictures of what I'm running and what I see when I run. And it's not really for anyone. I mean, people can look at it and people can join my Instagram, but it's mainly just to document it and keep myself motivated and help other people as well. Because as I said, I'm not in it for running my fastest personal best or anything like that. I don't put anything on there about how fast I've done something in or quick or anything. That's not what it's about.
It's about getting out there. Yeah. So Ishan now has chemo every 4 weeks, is that right? Take us through your month.
So we had his intense phase of chemo, and then that the chemo reduced. So now he has 3 weeks of chemo. So he has 3 Thursdays in a row, and then he has a break for 3 weeks, and then he has 3 weeks again. And that will continue until the summer when he finishes. And then.
Okay. So does he go into hospital for chemo? What happens?
Yeah. So he goes into hospital for the chemo. So on the first, on week one, as I say, he has a double drug. So he has vincristine and carboplatin. And that's the worst for him in terms of feeling tired and having side effects. And then the next two, it's reduced. So he just has the vincristine, just the one drug. So the first one, he has to get hooked up to, like, he calls it a robot, Bruno the robot, gets hooked up to Bruno the robot. And then he has one of the other drugs inserted into his stomach and through his, like, a port.
How does he cope with that? And, I mean, how do you cope with that? Because, I mean, chemo is a pretty evil treatment in terms of its side effect. I mean, does he accept it?
Yeah, so when he first started having chemo, he was really anxious, really upset. We had times in the hospital where he would be you know, crying and very anxious, and it was very distressing for everybody. And the nurses told me he will get used to this. I just didn't really believe him. I thought, no, my Ishan won't get used to this. But he has. He's actually has got used to it, which is just amazing, really. He's
it is amazing, especially when you think that the treatment is for his long-term benefit, and so it's not something that he can feel or experience the benefits of straight away. It's quite remarkable.
It's really difficult to comprehend. So I haven't really explained to him how long his chemo is going to continue for, because when it was 18 months, he was only 5 years old. It's, that's, you know, big, actually big chunk of his life. So, but when we get to January, we can start counting down a bit because it will be 6 months left. But yeah, he copes, he does cope with it quite well, but it all has to be on his terms. So he's very much in control of the situation. So he only likes to have one nurse. If there's too many, he's not, he doesn't hold back. He's like, you need to go away, and I just want this person. And then he just does all these little things that help him be in control. So he tells the nurse when he's ready for them to insert the drug into his port. He does like this little dinosaur roar to tell him he's ready. And then I always take him for a treat afterwards. I mean, he did, there is, anxiety of children is really hard to tell. So he is much better, but you know, he does feel it. Sometimes he's worried, he can't sleep, he asks me questions. And now I've noticed as he's getting a bit older, he's just turned six, he is asking me, you know, why does my sister not go to hospital? Do other people go to hospital? So he's got a few questions. He has been absolutely amazing. He really has. So we're going to have a big party for him in the summer, a brave boy party. And he's going to invite all his class friends. And even though he might have to have chemo again in the future, and the road is not coming to an end in the summer, because this is a lifelong condition he has with NF, and he'll always have MRI scans and checks and all of that. He will always be going into hospital, but there has to be some end. There has to be a point where we say that's the end of this part.
No, definitely. And for yourself as his mother, I mean, the running is obviously a key thing for you in terms of managing the situation at home. Are there any other things that help you? I mean, you can't actually have much time. I can't even imagine how you juggle everything. But is there anything else that you find helpful?
Talking therapies. So I have a counsellor. The hospital have been amazing. So it's Nottingham Hospital Charity. They provide a lot for you. So there's parent rooms, and they provide counselling, support. When Ishan was in hospital, there was an education support for him. You know, lots of things that people don't realise that a hospital might do unless you're in that situation. So there's lots of support.
And has that helped?
Yeah, it has helped. And you know, that's another reason why I did the Great North Run, was to raise money for Ishan's hospital ward.
Yes.
I've got some very good friends. My husband, Bridge, he likes running, but he doesn't get to go as much as me because he prioritises me. He prioritises my mental health. And I think without him giving me that time to run, our family wouldn't work as well. And I'm so thankful. We all love him to bits, and he holds us all up. So I'm the emotional person. He's very practical. He makes space for my running, and that's the biggest thing he could have done to support me. And I just hope that we will have some time to actually run together in the future. It's difficult because we don't have family living near us. So my parents-in-law and his family live in Mauritius, and mine live in South Wales. So we don't have that around us. And there's chemo, there's MRI scans, there's vision checks. Ishan has his blood every Wednesday. We both work. So if the juggle struggle is real, but the running is helped massively. And it just goes to show, you know, as mums and people busy lives, sometimes you put your needs at the end of something. But by prioritising my running and my mental health, and with my husband's support, it's meant everything else is that little bit easier to do. We just couldn't have done it without him. And also with the support from our family, and sometimes, you know, that's been from afar, but we've really appreciated it. And we've got some incredible friends in Derby that have all stepped up. And there's been people that have come into my life this year that have seemed to have come from nowhere that have helped us as well. The nurses and the doctors at the hospital, and also our workplaces, because they're letting us be flexible, because, you know, we're managing with a son on chemo, and they're, you know, letting us work flexibly around that. So yeah, we're just going to do it with all those things helping.
Of course. I mean, they must be so important. And in terms of your running, do you generally run on your own, or do you run with other people?
A mixture, really. So I run with my running group on a Monday, although what I like about the running group is that you can run along with someone if you want to, or you can just be with other people, but not necessarily chatting. So sometimes it depends what kind of mood you're in, what you fancy. And now it's getting dark. It's always nice to run with other people. Otherwise, I wouldn't be running out by myself. So that's on a Monday night. And then I have a running friend and we go running together every Saturday. And we kind of met through, so the running group have a WhatsApp group and we kind of went on a blind date for running, really. So she was looking for someone to go running with and so was I. And this was just before Ishan got poorly. And I remember she sent me a picture of her leggings, like, to go and meet her. It was like a blind date of running. And yeah, I ran to be Saturday. She's really good for me to help with my running because she is faster than me and she's brought my fitness up, really. So after running with her for some time, I have got a bit faster than I was. And then by myself, well, I like running by myself.
I mean, do you think running is a part of your life now?
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't be without it. It just gives you that focus. It pauses life for me. So unless I got injured or something, I can't see a reason why I wouldn't want that. It just takes all that, the pressure away. It makes you, like, your body feel strong. Your body can do this. And I like the progress that you can see because I go every week. I can do things that maybe I couldn't have done a while ago. Like, I can run up that hill without stopping. And I like that feeling.
Yeah, which is amazing.
And it's just amazing that your body can do this. And I never really thought it could. And it's just putting one foot in front of another. Everybody can run. It doesn't matter how long it takes you to. The couch to 5K is absolutely brilliant. And like you were saying, you can just carry on, do week 5, 9 times if you wanted to. Met so many nice people as well. It's just been really good.
And what do you think about when you run?
I'm always interested in that as well, because for me, there's so much in my mind all the time. But when I'm running, it doesn't come in my mind. It's like magic.
Do you have a clear mind? You're not consciously thinking about anything.
No. So if I'm running with my friend, it's just like a little bit of a chit chat. Or sometimes because you're running side by side with somebody, so you can talk about things but not feel that kind of intenseness. So, you know, I went running with one of my best friends the other day, the girl I was telling you about that looked after Ayla, and we were talking about all sorts of things and it was just nice. It's just absorbing where you are and noticing things. Another really good thing that I've loved about running is that if you don't want to talk to somebody, you don't have to, because you're just running past them and you can give them a little wave. And I love that.
And so what advice would you give to anyone else thinking about running?
Just go for it, because best thing is that you're on your doorstep. So if you don't have much time, like I don't have much time, my exercise starts as soon as I've left the door. So it's really good for busy lives. You don't have to worry about speed or anything. Like walk, run. I still like walk now, and I've been, you know, I did the Great North Run, but I still had a little walk. I think, well, why not? It doesn't matter.
No, and I think your point also about it starting outside the door is a really good one. It's not like you've got to go somewhere or go to the gym or go swimming. You know, it is when you're limited, time limited, you can just start straight away.
I wanted to ask about your running as well.
Yeah. No, I started because I'm 58 and I only started a few years ago. I'd never done any exercise at all. And I had a cancer scare. I had melanoma, like stage 3. So it spread to my lymph node. So I had to have my lymph nodes like removed this side. And I had the growth off my back taken out. It is that sort of thing that it just makes life finite, you know, and you're aware of your own, you know, you're not going to be here for it. And I've never done any. In fact, I've loathed sport all my life. I mean, my mum was very much like that. She's like, she hated it. And I think she sort of passed that on to me. And team sports and those sorts of things were like my idea of health.
Yeah, and me as well. And I wanted to do that.
Because I've got an 11-year-old daughter who's just started at secondary school. And I really want to give her the pleasure of sport and activity. But I think there's something about the way it's taught in schools can just be really...
It's really off-putting, isn't it? Yeah.
Anyway, so that was it. And then I had done a couple of couch to fight. Well, no, not couch to 5Ks. I've done a couple of 5K charity runs in the past. Like, you'd never done any training. And I started and I stopped and then I started for my physical health and fitness. It's definitely the mental health benefits that being out there, because I work from, I mean, pre-COVID, I work freelance, so I've always worked at home. I just find that it just lifts my mood. You feel like you're getting a bit off track, or you get I'm not like really depressive person, but you know, if your mood's sinking, I just find it just lifts me a bit and helps me to feel better.
Yeah,
and it's like I've had this really busy few weeks, nothing like your busy weeks, you know. I just come home and what can feel overwhelming. I just somehow life feels more manageable after going for a run.
It does. I feel exactly the same. It's like, it's almost like a little bit addictive. Like if I don't go running, I don't feel myself. I don't feel like I can, my body needs it. It gets to a point where it's like, oh, my body needed that. So I must give that to myself.
I see it as like, I've described it before, but it's sort of like resetting the clock. It sort of gets me back into the right groove. That's the one, like you say, that's the one thing I do for myself, really. And I think I would really struggle if I couldn't do it long term now. Yeah. I'm very slow and I'm very, but it does, like you said, none of that matters. That's not why I'm doing
it. No, exactly. It's not why you're doing it. I always find I have to prioritise. So people say to me, oh, they don't understand how I can fit running in, but it's about prioritising. Yeah. So I fit running in because my house is a mess.
Yeah.
because I prioritised the running. That's the only reason I'm like, all right, you might see me running, but I am not, everyone else is a mess. But yeah, just I think it just depends on what you prioritise.
But then if you come back and you're feeling better for it, probably you'll tidy the house quicker as a result.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck with it all, Jen.
Thank you.
I really hope that, you know, that the chemo's successful with Isha. Presumably you're having regular scans, are you? Do you have updates and things? Yeah.
This last one was September and everything is going positive, so his tumor has reduced and it's taken some pressure off his optic nerve again, which they, you know, their aim is for it to be stable where his is reduced. So it's a weird situation to be in because you're devastated. So even when you get good news, it's like, obviously that's great, but it's a weird place to be in. But you know, things are much better than we ever thought they would be. Scans so far have been good. He's got his next one, I think, in February.
Well, good luck with it all, and keep running, Jen. Look after yourself, keep self-care.
Well, keep running.
Many thanks for listening today, and if you've enjoyed the show, then please do leave a review. It does make a difference and it would be very much appreciated. Take care and see you again soon. Bye.